In a world with custom calls, custom shotguns, and custom shotgun shells, why stop there? Why not custom decoy rigs made to hunt the way you hunt? From the jerk cords for the flooded timbers of Arkansas, to the long line for the diver hunts of the Great Lakes, to the Texas rigs for the crawfish ponds of Louisiana and the rice fields of the Sacramento Valley. At Abear's Custom Decoy Rigs, LLC, they have the rig for you. From their coated cable to their patent tangle-free monofilament rigs to their endless weight, shapes, and sizes, they have what you're looking for. Find them at www.abearcustomdecoyrigs.com or find them on their Facebook page. Remember, get the rig for the way you hunt.
Flyway Connections is also brought to you by DOW Outfitters. DOW is based out of Walnut Ridge, Arkansas, specializing in hunts in flooded agricultural fields. They can also accommodate any group, whether it's a hunting trip with a family, corporation group, or buddies just going on a fun getaway trip. When you book a trip with DOW, you are guaranteed hardworking, knowledgeable guides, up-to-date, clean lodging, and positive attitudes from all their employees. DOW also takes pride in working with nonprofit organizations. If you're looking to book a hunt that includes great times and even better people, call Dustin Will Banks at 770-833-2708 or contact them at their Facebook page at DOW Outfitters. While you're there, go ahead and give them a like and follow to stay tuned and see what's going on during the season. You can also tune in to the action on Instagram at DOW Outfitters.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to another show of Flyway Connections. Like always, my name is Chris. I'm here with my buddy, Joe. Joe?
Hey, how are you guys doing this evening? So, once again, this is going back to our call segments for this year. Super excited for this one. Super excited for our guest. Great guy in the call industry. Won multiple titles, but, the big one is, he is the 2022 World Duck Calling Champion. Mr. Seth Fields of Fields Custom Calls. Hey, how you doing, Seth?
Good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Not bad, not bad. Yeah,
brother.
So, oh, man. I'm going to comment about your mount. It's actually a real cool dead mount right there, some specs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah.
It's my favorite. Me and my wife actually killed those together. I killed one, and she killed the tar belly in California.
Oh no, we're in California.
The Sac Valley.
Dude, that's actually like right. That's where I was born and raised at.
Really?
Yep. Born and raised in Fairfield, and then we had two duck clubs up there in the Sink, like right in the Sacramento Valley.
Yeah, we weren't far. We weren't far from there. We were just south of Willows.
Yep. Yep.
From there. So
was it a guide service or a duck club or?
Yeah, it was guide service. That a buddy of mine, Colby Stillwell, lives out there and he was guiding for him at the time. He's got Stillwell Hunting Adventures now out there that he runs. But yeah.
Yeah, actually, so, Bronson only lives 20 minutes from where I grew up at.
Bronson Lasley,
yeah,
the young legend.
He was doing pretty good this year.
He's a good,
yeah, he's a good guy.
Puts a lot of hard work and effort into it. Yeah, it's awesome.
Does. So, like we said, you just kind of launched within like the last year or so your new call company of Field Custom Calls.
Yes, sir.
How's that going, and how'd that come about?
Well, I think anybody that has ever competed in a duck calling contest, if they've done it very long and they collect duck calls, if they've never said they've not thought about making their own call, whether it was to sell or just to make it, they'd probably be lying. Basically, my wife got me a present. 2018 was a jet variable speed lathe. And I've been messing with it since 2018, off and on, just whenever I have time. And once
once we got moved in over here at this house and then we had my son, I set a goal, you know, to try to start saving for a shop to build. And I said, once I get that, you know, I'm going to start making some calls. Well, I started making more calls and spending more time out there, you know, before I even got the shop put up. And, just been working at it, refining it. I've made a lot of calls that weren't very good. I made a lot of calls that were borderline, and I made just a few that were exceptional. And that, I picked one of my calls that I thought I was really, really happy with, had good success within the field, with this year. And that's what, I had my jig made, on. And, now currently I think, I've made these 7 calls that I've actually sent to people. There's probably 100 that are, I guess, bedroom. And then I just sent, let's see, calls 8 through 15 that'll be in my books to NWTF, to the National Wildlife Turkey Federation, call makers classic up there.
Yeah, I mean, that's nice. Huge. Yeah, that's definitely, for, you know, the viewers who don't know or the guys who do know, that's a huge honor to even be entered in that calling competition. Where it's not like the calling competition, but it's kind of where people judge your the craftsmanship, you know, of your calls.
Of your call. Yeah. The fun thing about that contest is you've got there's different classes between how all, you know, how well, you know, you make the call, how pretty it is. There's a decorative side, but then there's also a working class, to where it's like they'll take about 8 or 10 guys. One or two of them might be competition guys. A couple of them might be run guide services. You might have a Ducks Unlimited president, and you might have some guys that are just hunters that know people. So you've got a variety of different ways people present air, different levels across their calling experience. So you get a kind of a mixed bag of judges to where it's not all one skill set and they don't all blow the same. So they can kind of judge that whole category. And it's kind of a, you know, gives it a fair shake, if you will. So it's pretty cool. I'm excited to kind of see how it turns out and see if they like the calls as much as I do.
Yeah. So you're calling, you start off with you know, modifying olds in the cut down, and you know, you're a real renowned cut down caller. You know, not taking away from, you know, the J frame you do, but what guy, you know, because you we're kind of coming back. We were talking last night where duck hunting's a big circle, right? It's where you know,
history repeats itself.
We're going back to the McAllisters and the Folsom clothing. Wax hats, and it's almost like, you know, we're going back to what our great grandfathers used. But what got you into the cut down realm?
Man, I guess at first, you know, that it was just competition. So whenever I first started, I was just a big hunter. I wanted nothing to do with calling competitions when I was in high school. And then I stumbled on to one my dad found about 45 minutes from my house. He said, if you'll go to this contest, I'll pay your entry fees. So you don't have to pay nothing. And I said, when is it? He said, Saturday. And I said, but it's Friday. And he was like, yeah, tomorrow.
Take down there. It's Friday.
So I called a buddy, Slayton Gare, and he's been competing since, you know, probably early 2000s, maybe late 90s. I called him and got the lowdown on it. And there was a novice contest with like 36 callers. And somehow, it was huge. 36 callers in the novice, and it was a novice meat calling contest. Well, I took first, and the first contest, you know, that I went to for meat calling. And right after that contest, there was a live duck contest that was an open. And all I knew was a meat duck. So we get in there, and Kent Cullum's in there, Hunter Grounds, Slayton, you know, lots of big name guys. And I was just like, man, this is awesome. Until the lady that come up there explained the contest was only 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what? And so Kent Cullum explained to me what to do, you know, for the difference in live duck and meat real quick. And he ended up in one, and I took second, and Hunter Grounds took third. So
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so
from right then I kind of fell in love with you know, the competition side of it and started learning and watching and listening to videos and watching YouTube and going here and there. And once I found out that there was a competition with a cut down call, I was like, well, I got to figure out this. And that's totally different, you know, air presentation, you know, how loud the call is, different sequences, you know, the flow of that type of contest is different. Some of the sounds that they're listening for is different than, you know, your Main Street or your meat or your live duck. So basically I got into the cut down calls because there was another contest, and then found out how good, you know, that they worked in the field. You know, so especially going hunting some timber spots in Arkansas, just a nice deep sound, just kind of really holds to the trees good, makes, you know, fills up the woods with a deep sound that carries, gets their attention. But yeah, that's how I got into the cut down game. And man, I've had a couple of good contests in, Louisiana and Texas and Arkansas, and that's the one contest that I'm chasing after is the one that they have in Little Rock, the World Cut Down, that started, I think it started in 2014, might've been the first year. And, I've got 3 or 4 top 5 finishes in that one. And I wasn't able to go for a couple of years, but I'm going to chase that one. That's the last world duck title that I don't have that I really would like to have before I hang it up and let my little brother start winning some.
Blaine is, you know, he's another good one. It's almost genetic.
Yeah, if he worked as hard as I did, I wouldn't stand a chance.
Yeah,
he's got raw talent, man. He I mean, 2014, 15, 16, and probably 17, I was blowing 325, 330 days a year. Like, confidently, I could say that. I mean, I had a duck call in my hand if we went to Walmart, church, a funeral, the grocery store. Like I had a duck call in my but.
So, Chris, like, if you're wondering, I have donated money to Blaine's.
I assumed. I didn't want to bring that up, but I assumed.
I have donated. It's funny. I was talking to Seth Russell. Like, I donate money to you guys, you know, throughout the year. When we go to the calling competitions, I'm like, I'll see you guys. I'm like, well, I know I'm donating today. But what transferred over? Like, because I know you started tinkering. Did you start making the J frames first before you started tinkering with the cut downs?
But like, I tell you, the more I messed with the thing that I liked about the cut downs is that, luckily I ran into a big lot of, old, you know, round holes, olds and baby blues that I've been, pushing the baby blue round holes. And then, you know, there's some keyholes, there's some copies of keyholes like that, Bryce Decker, does. So, you know, just playing with something that's already there and messing around with it, seeing what happens when you sand here, sand there. And take this down, raise this up. That kind of is pretty, it helps a lot to be able to mess with something. And when you don't feel like it's, you know, like your grandpa's, you know, butch hand turned call, you know, that you can't risk messing up. It makes it your freedoms and your learning a little come by a little faster, I feel like. But man, that's all it is. Just like anything else, messing with calls, learning to cook a steak, you know, hitting a golf ball, practice, you know, practice cooking, practice golf, whatever it is, practice sanding on your tone boards, putting a reed in there, seeing what happens. That's the only way you're going to learn and get, you know, your experience. You know, it's not something that you can't just luck into. And, you know, if you're going to be a good call maker or, you know, a good duck call or goose call tuner, you can't just put a reed in there and push your wedge down, you know, and be like, it's good. You know, you've got to figure out what happens when your reed goes forward, back, the wedge goes up, the wedge goes down, you know, all that type of stuff. Scratching on that tone board, if I need a little bit more scratch, if the guy blows, you know, with a different kind of air presentation than me, how can I fit it to him? And something that's been super fun ever since I started messing with the old T20s, turning them into spec calls, turning them into no goose calls. Those have just been a hit. And man, people love how easy they are, how, you know, if they explain to me how they blow or what sounds they're wanting, you know, that I've figured out how to kind of do that. And man, just buying them left and right. I bet I bought 600 of those old T20s and stuff, just eBay, yard sales, all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So how did you, when you got in, you talked about your journey into call making, how you kind of started and messing around. So when did you actually start, like, I guess, offering for them for like sale and stuff?
I guess that would have been towards the beginning of last year, 2023, is whenever I first started with mostly the old spec calls, modifying those. And that's what I saved all year long. Anytime I did a call for that, that's what I saved my money for going towards my shop. Once I did quite a few of those and kind of had got a head start on tuning a bunch up, you know, I had 40 or 50, you know, stuck in my thing. I started working on duck calls more and started modifying the round holes and modifying a few keyholes for guys. And once I kind of figured that out, it's helped a whole lot being able to have confidence to, you know, take something like that. Because to me, like, you know, I can say anybody can take sandpaper or a file and rub on something, write their name on the back of it and charge for it. But to me, I don't, it's not about the money. It's about maximizing, you know, operational function of a duck and goose call, and how can I help somebody by making their instrument or their tool that they, you know, use in the field. Can I make it better so that they have a better chance of success to kill birds? And you know, it's not about money to me. It's about making people, you know, happy and confident in their call, because you're confident in it. You know, it's good through in the sound whenever you're talking to geese, snow geese, specks, ducks. And in the end, you know, that's what we're all out there. We're not out there saying, I got this cool call.
I think for me, man, it's fascinating, because we've talked to a lot of call makers. I mean, we personally met a lot of them. I've seen a lot of them in different calling competitions. You know, Joe's, you know, I had the opportunity to go with Joe to get me into this like lifestyle and stuff. So, but it's fascinating with call makers who are callers and know the grind, know what it takes, and their passion towards making a call. It's almost like, we like to bring up like sports examples. Me and Joe are both big baseball players, but going on the field and you're passionate about the sport and teaching it to your son or teaching it to a team or something like that, and getting really into the nitty gritty with it, because you know how that felt, you know, coming out there, smelling the chalk of the field and stuff. Kind of same thing, coming out there, hearing your call, hearing what a call should make, different sounds. Because I'll be honest, like it fascinates me. And it's, Joe knows there's people out there who've never been in a calling competition. I mean, they make calls. But I think when it comes to an actual caller who's in there, been in competitions and grinded out, I mean, it's just fascinating. And there's more of a respect for me on that. And as far as like a consumer, like that's what I look for, is like, how passionate are you about this call? So, I mean.
Well, I'll just tell you, there's nothing like it. I know we mentioned earlier about, you know, making your own call and, you know, hunting with it, using it on stage. But man, you know, there's a different kind of feeling between, you know, blowing someone else's call, whether it's in a contest, whether it's sitting in your kitchen, whether it's, you know, out there in the field. And when you know that you stood behind the lathe and it was a square piece of wood and you turned it down and did all the work and it makes noises, and not only does it make noises, but it makes, you know, good noise, and it's easy to use and it's efficient, and you know, it, like, it did what you wanted it, you know, to do. That's something totally different. And it's easy to be prideful, you know, in that, but you know, it's a different kind of pride. It's hard to explain. It's hard to explain the way it feels. But I mean, whenever, and I hope it's still this way 20 years from now, you know, and I think it will be. I love it. And I just, I, I love every bit about the call making, duck calls in general, the collectability of everyone that's, you know, come before us, that's, you know, will still be collected years after that all of us aren't on the earth anymore. I just think it's cool. But man, whenever when I made that first duck call and I stuck a reed and cork in it and sanded on it, and I was like, my eyes lit up. I was like, whoa, that's not like all this other junk that I've been doing. This yeah. one is, you know. And then I was like, so I looked at what I did and I wrote, I have a notebook, you know, where I was writing down everything, you know, tone channel links, how hard did I push my reamers in? What was this size? You know, where did I take it off? And I just looked at it and I was like, all right, I'm going to try to do that again. And then I did it again and then did it again, you know. And it's just like, and it's not every one of them, it doesn't come off perfect. And every call, you know, when you're making it by hand, to the most part, you can get them close, but it's not like a precision, you know, CNC machine that can nail, you know, down to the hundred, you know, thousandths, you know, it's, you just can't do that, by hand. You can get close, but you know, from somebody that blows calls their whole life, you know, I can pick out when something's close and not exact. You know, I can tell yeah. you, it's like, that's good. It's not what I had over here. It's still a good call. But that's just because I've been blowing a duck call so much and developed. It's kind of like taste buds. when you taste a steak, you know what's, you know, yeah. you know what it, whenever I first lean into a duck call, I'm like, that's good stuff right there.
So it does almost seem like, you know, and it's only like that with a lot of custom call makers that are turning by hand. It almost seems like each call you make has its own little personality and soul to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember the hunt that you know with the J frame that you built and, you know, and had the jig cut on was?
Oh yeah.
Where you hit that duck, that mallard duck, and it might have been mm-hmm. a gadwall or a pintail. But do you remember that day when you hit that and you noticed?
Oh
that,
yeah. And I mean, that's what I was hoping this weekend. We didn't have any, but this last weekend I had one of my baby blues, one of my hand turned calls.
Right here.
This is my lanyard, but I had one of my T20 specs and then one of my old snow goose and then little baby blue round hole, and then that's one of my red acrylic, you know, that I just turned. It doesn't have a band on it. It's a funny story with that red call. I turned it down and I told one of my role models, good friend of mine, Stump. I said, Stump, I learned something today in the shop. And he said, what'd you learn? And I said, well, you know that little thing that goes on the barrel? It's usually made out of brass or copper. He was like, yeah, the band. And I was like, did you know if you measure the inside of that band and it's this number and you turn your acrylic part smaller than that number, that band won't fit on there? And he giggled and laughed. And I was like, yeah, I said, I turned that part too small. I said, so now I get to go a little bit smaller. And eventually I talked about putting I was like, I already got a plan. I said, I can turn it all the way down to 3/4 and then I can drill a 3/4 inch hole in a piece of black acrylic. And then I can put a black acrylic band on it and turn the band down and then, you know, shine it up and it'll have a black acrylic band. And we had a good laugh over that. But I think I'm just going to, I hunted that red call all duck season this year. And I was super, super happy with how it, I've just enough lift and fall to radius on the tone board to where the, you know, some old calls that are really smooth and soft and mellow almost, there's a lot of reed on the tone board and they sound really good until you get them wet, until you, you know, spit and you put the call down and you start calling ducks. You looking around, you playing with your buddies and then, oh, there's some ducks and you go to blow it and you can't break it free because the reed's stuck to the tone board. Well, that was one thing that I was super stoked about mine all season. And not one time did it, you know, stick due to my moisture because I got just enough reed set, got just enough scratching and I can still get a lift clean, fast, responsive, loud, quiet, everything that I would want in a good hunting call. So that was one thing I was super happy about.
Yeah, so I know you're hunting a J frame. You're hunting a, you know, one of your cut downs. You're hunting one of your specs. You're hunting one of your snows.
You know, yep.
And you're hunting in West Tennessee, right?
A little bit. My main lease is in Southwest Missouri, just literally right on the edge of the state. You know, it's 20 minutes from Tennessee border, but that's where my main lease is. But there's a few holes around here in West Tennessee that I'll hunt from time to time nowadays.
Do you mainly hunt ag, or you hunt, you know, a lot of timber?
Mostly. So my lease in Missouri is a big field. We have a pit right in the middle of a levee, and we've got 80 acre fields on both sides. The way a bird flies, maybe 10, 15, 20 miles from the Mississippi River, something like that. So, but there's little tributaries and smaller rivers that lead to it. It's mostly open, all fields around there. A couple spots off the St. Francis River of timber. But man, that's one thing that a lot of people think, you know, oh, a cut down, you know, that's supposed to be blown in the woods. But man, I'll tell you, I've proven it to my guys over and over. A lot of the guys in my pit, you know, they blow their duck calls, and if the wind's blowing in Southeast Missouri, and it's blowing 15, 20 miles an hour and you're wide open field, your sound at 80 yards, it's gone. You know, you can't hear if you're upwind of that, any of the higher pitch duck calls, you know, more smooth, you know, like a reed and a half, or, you know, even like say a Haydale, that you just can't hear them. You know, they're just, that sound just doesn't travel. It doesn't pierce through that wind as much. And I blew that cut down because it's got a deeper, mellower sound, because that the deep sound is what carries further. That's why, yeah, like on a Navy ship, you know, whenever they're out there in the water in the fog, it goes, you know, because low sound wave frequencies travel further before they dissipate into the air.
Yeah, we had Jim Ronquist talking about like bass in a car is the example he used where he lives on the highway. Mm-hmm. When people have the radio, he's like, I can tell who has a stock radio and who has, you know, some subwoofer, and they hear that, you know, that boom, mm-hmm, that bass into it.
Huh. You learn something new every day.
Yeah. So for the consumers and for the people listening, you know, and they may not be getting into the contest column, but they're getting into where, kind of like you said, you know, the Haydale DR85, which is, mm-hmm, you know, tons of ducks.
More ducks.
Yeah. Yeah, probably between that and the winch have killed, you know, probably more ducks in America. But, yep, you know, but some of the guys that want to kind of get to the acrylics, because, you know, I've had Haydales, I've had some of the winches, Polys, they start to crack a little bit, and, you know, you got to,
yep.
But the guys that want to get in that acrylic, they're more of that higher end call. What do you recommend? I mean, for your call, do you recommend guys that, you know, go into your J frame or go into your cut down, or
it just kind of fits. It kind of is whatever. I'm a really strong believer in, you know, not every call is going to fit every person, for sure, because everyone is at a different place in where physically and skillfully they're able to present their air into a call. So my strongest recommendation as a caller, and this is a horrible business tactic, but I don't care if you blow my duck call, or if you blow, you know, Ken Eason's duck call, or if you blow Stumps, you know, at RM calls, you know, I don't care whose duck call you blow, but try some calls, you know, find one that you like as a caller, and as a customer. And if that happens to be mine, awesome. You know, if it's Kent's, awesome. You know, and as a contest caller, you know, I don't care if I make a duck call. If you blow any of the other six people's calls, that's fine with me. I'll gladly help you. You know, I don't care. If you want to help with spec calling, I don't ask you, well, do you blow a Redbone? Do you blow a Riceland? Do you blow a Vendetta? Do you blow a – I mean, it makes no difference. I mean, this past year, I had tuned so many of those old specs, and, you know, I had practiced so much, you know, blowing them, that for the first time since I've blown in world spec, I blew an old T20 in the world spec and took second in the world blowing a little bitty plastic, you know, half inch gut call. And, you know, most people would think that that wouldn't be possible, but it's just whatever you get comfortable on. You know, it's if you sound, if one, if it sounds good, and then two, are you comfortable? Because if you're not comfortable, whether you're on the stage or whether you're in the field, you're not going to be successful. You know, whether that's, you know, trying to make judges' ears happy or trying to, you know, make birds happy. Because like me as a person, I can hear when someone confidently like, hey, my name's Joe Sparis, nice to meet you. Or hey, Mr. Seth, my name's Joe. You know, like that's what birds hear. That's what we hear when we're judging. I can hear when you're not confident in yourself. So yeah, try some things. But for the most part, I want to build calls, you know, that are super easy to run. You know, whether it's that cut down, whether it's a J frame, you know, the speckle belly, because to me, that's what people for the most part want. You know, there's no reason that we should be having a hemorrhagic stroke or an aneurysm because we have to blow so hard, you know, to break the call. You know, and used to, that's how calls were. You know, they took a lot of air, had a lot of volume. But if I can get, you know, if I can get this level of volume with this little bit of work instead of this much work to get this volume, I'm doing the little, you know, the little bit of that I can. So like, that's why I've had guys, you know, like, man, you know, this speckle belly call, it breaks over so easy. I don't feel like I'm giving up too much volume. You know, same thing with the cut down. They're like, you know, I've had some cut downs, they just take tons of air, but this one's, you know, it's got some duct built into it and it doesn't take too much, you know, air for me to run, you know, and I can set those calls up lighter for younger or older guys, or guys that, you know, maybe you're in your 40s, but you just started duck calling in the last 5 or 6 years, you know, and you haven't learned to push air into the call hard yet correctly. You can push air hard in it, but it's not correctly. So, you know, making calls, you know, that are easy to run, and then I can adjust as the caller gets better, you know, either longer reads, standing on the tone board, taking some more stuff off. And, you know, I'm still learning as a call maker because I'm a young call maker. I'm a good established caller. And I know when I know what call is right or wrong, but, you know, trying to figure out everything about what makes the call do what, because you might want the call to be more raspy or deeper sound, and you can do that several different ways. You can take more off the front of the call, you can put a bigger exhaust so that it's rattling more in the back, or you can cut more dog ears on the reed, a longer reed, you know, all kind of, you know, there's different ways to get to the same goal. But if you do it the wrong way, you might lose something else. You know, you might lose some finesse that you had, or, you know, the feed might not be as fast now because of what you changed, or you might not have as much range. If you made the exhaust too big, now you don't have the range that you had to hit a higher pitch, you know, a mellow, clean note to a deep, scratchy note. Everything may be scratchy now. So that's what's fun to me about that, is just figuring out each little thing and learning what all affects. Because when you make a change, that something's going to happen. You change it, you know, something's going to happen. What is it?
It's even like with when you're tuning a call on the Mylar reed, you know, stump. You know, we talk about stump all the time. Some, you know, he's been a great friend to all of us. But he taught me the longest time is like, put down the scissors, get a nail file, and if you're like the slightest, you might be one or too many rakes across that. And it goes from a deep tone to like a teal call, a blue wing teal call. And he's like, it doesn't take much off that reed to change the profile of the call.
Yeah, and you'd be amazed at the same thing can happen on that tone board, because like I take fingernail files, you know, double-sided emery boards, whenever I'm working on the tone board, you know, I may get it, and some of my cut downs, I cut them to the spot to where I'm like, yeah, that's pretty close. I don't go too far, because once you go too far, you can't put it back on. You can always take it off, but you can't put it back on. Well, I got one, I think it was this morning. It was either this morning or yesterday, but I looked at it, I said, that's pretty good. And I blew it, and it did not seem close. I knew it was, but it seemed real high pitch, way too easy. It didn't have a lot of scratch into it. And I literally took, let me see if I can pull this whole thing out here. I took it out. I took my fingernail file and I went 1, 2, 3, 4. Clean. Put my reeds in there, put my cork in there. Bop, bop. I was like, holy smoke. So four little swipes on that board in the right place can make the world. You know, so like, it's crazy, you know, that learning some of that stuff and how much such a small thing can change, because it's not like it's a big house. It's a little bitty duck call. It's, you know, 3.5 long on the tone board. So, you know, making 30,000ths change to that is a lot different than making 30,000ths change to the square on a house. You know, 30,000, 80 foot might not be that much, but in 3 inches, it's quite a bit.
So yeah, that's one thing that fascinates me about duck calls and duck calls.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's just all, you know, Chris and them make fun of me. They're like, "Oh, you're a duck call collector." I'm like, "Well, one, I hunt all my calls, and two is you're always looking for different sounds." And I think it's super neat just hearing different sounds you can get out of calls and different call makers.
Yep, and then, man, as I always try to put it, because I'm a big collector, I haven't bought a ton of calls in the last few years just because I got married, got a son, and I hadn't, you know, got a ton of extra money saved back up. But, man, I probably got 350 duck calls, and just about every one of them are, you know, custom calls from somebody. But, you know, like just about. Out of 350, which is a pretty big number to me, you know, I can just about look at every call and remember. When I look at the call, I can remember who makes it, where I got it from. You know, when did I get it? Did I pick it up at a trade show? Was I at their house? You know, did I request it? Why did I? You know, why did I want that? What did I see that inspired me to get that combination made? You know, and so. But as I tell everybody, especially my wife, there's worse things that we could be spending money on. And, you know, there's heroin, cocaine, you know, bad life that we could, you know, and just about because there's so many duck call collectors, you know, if something happened tomorrow and, you know, my son or my wife, you know, had to go in the hospital, I could clean that duck call collection out pretty quick, and it's handmade stuff and people want it. It's not necessarily an investment, but I mean it's there. If there was an emergency, you know, I could get rid of it, but it would have to be an emergency because I love my duck calls. If I've got a call made for me, or you know, sometimes call makers make, you know, just they were like, "Hey, I want you to test this new call that I've made. You know, give me your rundown. What do you think? What does it need? What is it missing? What do you like?" And they'll just make one and send it to me, and I've never gotten rid of one duck call period that a call maker has ever given to me. And I just have no plans to ever, you know, see that happening. Yeah. So it's
special with that.
Yeah, it's something special, cool, you know, and I love doing that for people because, you know, and there's some guys that are great, great call makers that just aren't, they're not that good at, you know, blowing a duck call in general. They're good enough, but, you know, they need a little bit of help. Just like I know, you know, a lot of people relate what you all talked about sports earlier.
Yeah.
We just used the baseball. I was going to go with NASCAR, but you know, I guarantee you half of the Major League Baseball players know absolutely zero about turning a bat on a lathe and, you know, the different aerodynamics of what actually makes it pop, which woods, you know, they know that, but they know absolutely nothing. One piece, two piece, other than what somebody has said. Hey, a one piece bat is better.
Or really, but, like for me, it's dimensions. If I want a front load, you know, a balanced bat, a front end loaded.
So it's like they don't know anything about that, but they can swing one and be like, "Dang, that thing is balanced. That's solid. Like it had perfect impact. It carried good. You know, it's hot." You know, trampolined right off the face. It didn't die mid-flight. You know, it just explosive. You know, they can tell you that, and that's kind of where I'm have been with it. And now I'm learning more about the call making side because I'm doing it myself. But you know, before it'd be like, well, you know, the bottom end's good, but when I go to lean on it, I just blow right over the top of it, even though I've got control that most people don't have. It's like there's not a wall, you know, sitting there. that helps me to not blow past it. You know, it's not that the call's too light, because most people be like, oh, you just need to put a longer reed in it. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it doesn't have a good wall on the top that holds it to that full sound. Like, I should be able to push this hard, but I can't. So, you know, that's stuff that I can figure out and feel in real time. And that's something that I'm blessed with. It's just blowing a duck call. I try to help as many as I can. So sometimes people still reach out. I'll make time, but you know, I don't care if I'm full blast doing my own thing. If somebody else wants help, my goal that I set out several years ago, was silly. This is a silly goal to most people, but you know, 40 years from now, whenever I'm old and can barely blow, I hope that I was able to give something back to make duck calls better than they were whenever I first came onto the scene. You know, I want there to be better duck calls, you know, in 2060 than there are in 2020. Just like in 2020, there's better duck calls than there were in 1970. And for that, you know, and if I can somehow, even if I'm not the one that invents it or makes it, I don't care. If I can help, you know, offer guidance and, you know, what I think, you know, versus, and it helps somebody else inspire, you know, quote unquote, the new norm or new perfect duck call. That's all I care. I don't need the credit. I just want to see, you know, duck call get better. And they're pretty dang good right now. Yeah. So,
And I know for the calling aspect, you know, I have two boys that are, you know, competing. I mean, I'll tell you right now, like, for the viewers, when Seth has, you know, judged my two boys in multiple competitions, and, you know, as a father, I'm definitely grateful for you, because you have given them, you know, good mentorship, and, you know, you've listened to their routine, taking notes, and, you know, you've helped. I was joking around, most of the first place plaques I have in my house aren't dads. You know, they're my kids. And, you know, and that's, you know, from help from you guys, you and Hayden and all that, and Stump and Bill Daniels. So, you know, for me as a father, watching my two boys grow up in this waterfowl world, you know, thank you.
You're welcome, bro.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, just the waterfowl industry, period. I mean, I haven't met anybody that's I haven't met horrible people. I've met nothing but great people in the industry, so.
Where do you live?
Texas.
Texas? Have you been out of the state of Texas yet?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't.
Well, next time we're somewhere and you're with me, you come with me. I'll direct you to the people that are just horrible.
I try to shield them from that.
Joe does a good job. I mean, yeah. I honestly haven't, but I mean, I'm not.
There's not me. There's not. Everybody, just about everybody, we're such a small, you know, niche community, that in comparison to other, that's what I've told somebody, is like, it's, you know, as much as passionate as we are about it, it's crazy that it's this small. You know, there's so many people, you know, I mean, there's pretty good amount of, you know, callers, you know, competitively, you know, or people that collect calls that don't compete. But, you know, I was like, if this was like basketball or baseball, I said, we have freaking TV shows and, you know, half these be in mansions, and I said it'd be crazy. But I think it's what keeps us humble. I think it's what keeps us humble and keeps us good people and friendly, and, you know, always opening our arms. You know, so many of these contests that you go to, we set out and talk to each other till 11, 12, 1 in the morning, you know, and most time it ain't got nothing to do with, you know, contests. We just catch it up, and, you know, it's therapy, friendship, fellowship.
Yeah, like he said, therapy. That, you know, that's really why, I mean, I love going to some of these contests. You know, I'll you know, it's, you guys keep my waterfowl season going in July.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, I grew up waterfowl hunting. You know, I came from a big waterfowl family, and then I moved out and everything. But you guys, you know, and I said this to, you know, Forrest and stuff, I get waterfowl season in July because I'm around you guys blowing, and, you know, we're talking about, you know, we're bringing back up duck season. We're talking about duck season. We're helping each other, you know, call and stuff. And I know you're a new funny. Your boy is almost what, 2 now?
Mm-hmm. Just turned two.
And for me, I have a 16-year-old, a 12, about to be a 13-year-old, and a 1-year-old. I started all over again. And, you know, I've said multiple times on this podcast. You know, my best duck. I love Chris. You know, me and Chris hunt all the time together. But my best hunting partners call me Dad. Mm-hmm. And have you built a call yet for your little one, or do you kind of have something?
He's got the very first one. Nice. The very I would have sent out, you know, to somebody. Mm-hmm. Good duck call. It's African Blackwood with a little sap on the nice. Band.
Nice.
Like band area. So yeah, it's me and my wife talked about it, and I was like, I'm gonna give him he got number one, and then Stump got number two. So
nice.
Stump's been basically a father figure, brother figure, maybe great grandfather actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a close friend of mine, and always will be. I love him and respect him. And so, yeah, my son got number one. He got number two. And I think my brother got three and my dad four, you know. So he's just like family. I mean, he came.
He's one guy you can't say enough good about, you know. He's helped me out. I mean, I probably wouldn't be on this podcast or even any if it wasn't for Stump. I mean, I met you through Stump on a hunt. Was it 2017 when we hunted together? Yeah, over at Mr. Charles's. And Stump's a great guy. He can be a character.
Oh yeah.
But he's just such a great guy. And what I like about Stump is Stump didn't get into duck calling or even duck hunting until later in life. You know, I tell people, you know, I told Chris, you know, they're like, oh, you know, I get a lot of newer guys in the duck hunt. I'm like, yo, listen, I know this guy. Like, he didn't even start duck hunting until his late 30s.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Just absolutely crazy about it. And it's just like, that's all it takes. And it doesn't matter, you know. That's something that's cool about duck hunting. Kind of like, I'd make a lot of references to golf because I like it. But it's kind of like, it's one of those things that it doesn't matter if you're 10, you know, 7, 8 or 70, if you're passionate about it, you know, you can do it. You know, there's always, and especially as you get older, you know, if you get a little bit more money, you're able to afford those things that are easier, you know, access to your hunting area. You know, stuff like that, you know, or when you're young, you can be passionate about it and you can walk 2 miles through a slough, you know, of waist deep water just to get where you're going. You know, that's something that I love about it is no matter the age, it don't matter. As long as you're passionate about it, duck hunting is, you can do it. So,
yeah. So for the viewers, if people wanted to get on, you know, on your list, do you have, you know, can they email and get on the list or.
Man, people message me and text me all the time. Right now it's, I haven't taken a single name. I haven't made a single dollar off of anything that I made hand turned on my lathe. Right now I've given it away. I have, sent these calls into NWTF.
Yeah.
So basically the goal is it's end of January right now. Duck season just finished up. Here in the next week or two, I'm going to start on the inside of my duck call shop. I just had a 40 by 70 built, and the whole shop, the outside's done, garage doors, concrete, but there's nothing on the inside. So I'm going to cut off about 20 feet of that, like a room that's 40 by 20, and that's going to be my duck call shop. Insulate it, you know, lights, put all my machines in there. Once I get everything organized and ready to go to where I can come out there and, you know, turn calls and got myself, that's whenever I'm going to start, you know, taking a, because so, right now I'm turning in a basement. Just my mother and father-in-law live next door and I've got all my equipment over there in one side of there, over there, you know, piddle, and it's his wood shop too. So, you know, he's got tools, I've got tools, there's stuff, there's no dust collectors going. So I've got to shop back up everything. So yeah, once I get that stuff set up and it's smoother, that's when I'm going to start taking orders, on calls. So.
So you said that, you gave calls away and stuff. So, mm-hmm. Joe, remind me to email Seth, my address just in case he's giving any more away. So, you know, I'll mess with you, man. But that's awesome, man. That's amazing. Hey, what were you saying, Joe?
For the consumers, you're looking maybe for your cut downs or your goose calls. Mm-hmm. Are you still profiling those and putting them out on your website?
Yeah, I still have some because of hunting season. My is super duper low. I've got a few of the on my website is just my fields custom call.com. So you can go on there. And right now, I think I have snow goose calls, the old snow goose calls that I modified, and then maybe three variances of the colors of spec calls. But I know a couple of them are sold out, and I just been so busy between work and trying to get a few days hunting in and getting those NWTF calls that I was just like, I'm going to let them, whatever I got on there right now, that's going to have to sell out before I, get time back in the shop to modify more guts up. But I think there's some camo. I did 50 camo calls this past year that I signed and numbered. So there's only 50 of them, and all the other ones, I had a bunch of the different colors, but 50 camo signed and numbered. And then I think there's some Christmas color ones left, like 6 or 7 of those that are green barrels with red inserts, maybe a black barrel with a red insert or something. But yeah, that's what I got left. And then the cut downs, I've just been kind of doing, in batches, 5 to 10, I'll throw them up on the website. And then if, make a video, and if somebody messages me, I'll take them down. But I've got one more of them to do tomorrow, and then I'm caught up on that. So I can still make some of the baby blues. But actually I'm low on barrels right now. Yeah. So
I'll tell you what, you're about to have one in the mail here pretty soon.
Yeah. So you were saying on the website and stuff, and just for the viewers and stuff that, that come on this podcast, because like Joe said earlier, we do get a lot of, new, waterfowlers, and a lot of them in the military, community and stuff. But if, let's say they want to get a hold of you or even check out your social media, how would they do that? And so Facebook and Instagram, and then your website, and you kind of like give it, let us know how they'd reach you.
I have Facebook, and there's 3 different profiles, so it's pretty easy to find. I got my personal profile that's Seth Fields, and then if there's also a Seth Fields that I call my duck calling page, and I tried to keep up with both of them for a while, and then just got tired of it, but it's just got only duck call related stuff on it. And then there is a Fields Custom Calls page there on Facebook. So you can message any of those. And if you are military, I do give military discount. My wife she's got the thing. All I have to do is send it to you. You can put in as a coupon or whatever it is whenever you go to check out. But yeah, just message me that if you're military. I'll gladly give you guys discount. Really thankful for all the service and being able to do what I do and enjoy myself here in the land of the free. Appreciate all your service. But I have those 3. I have Instagram. And then I guess there's a TikTok, my TikTok page.
Yeah, no one messes with TikTok. I think we have a TikTok.
We try TikTok. Yeah. It's just too much.
I'm too old. Well, look, dude, technically, I can't even have a TikTok. Illegally.
Oh, because of your
job purposes. Yeah, I signed an NDA saying that Joe can't TikTok. It's fine by me.
I got Snapchat too. I don't know what the thing is, but yeah. But yeah, you message me on any of them and get with me. And if I've got something, or if you've got an old alt or something that you want reworked, that's basically that money that I'm doing working on alts. Some people send in their T20s, or their grandpa's, T20, and want me to bring it back to life for an old keyhole, and all that money is going straight towards my shop of stuff I need to, be able to take orders and produce, and hopefully if I can continue to do pretty good and spend some time on my off weeks, I'm hopeful to have an acrylic spec call and an acrylic duck call by next duck hunting season. So that's a little goal. It's not a main goal, but that's a side quest, a little well, you know, start taking some orders and doing some custom calls this first. But then if I can get one lined up and work with some guys and make what I have on my lanyard into form of CNC to where I could offer it more readily, I would love to have at least a couple of colors by duck season. And then everybody wants me to make, you know, this T20 in acrylic. And I'm like, no, I want to make something better than the T20. I was like, I can get it close. I said, I want just a little bit more, just a little bit more volume, but not too much. You know, just a little bit crisper with that acrylic. So I've got a couple of prototypes that I've worked on and whatnot. So hopefully I'll be happy enough by duck season with both of them that I'm able to move forward with that. So, but just stay tuned. I'll be posting stuff on Facebook as I come up with new stuff and, you know, videos on TikTok if I have fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Definitely check them out.
Check them out. But
yeah.
Hey, Seth, I definitely appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah.
You know, thank you. I'll probably see you down here in Lackawanna here pretty soon, within a couple months or so.
And it'll be here before we know it.
Yeah, it'll be here before you know it. But, you know, like I said, it's an honor to have you on. And thank you for just taking the time to, you know, talk to us and talk to the viewers about, you know, your calls and calling in general.
Heck yeah, anytime, guys. And if anybody has any questions, you know, I try my best, you know. I try my best to overcomplicate my life, you know, put way too many things. If anybody has any questions with their duck calls, their contest calling, you know, they're wanting to get into it, want advice on routines or whatnot, I don't care if it's Canada, which I'm just okay at, but I can listen and explain a routine good. But duck calling, spec calling, snow calling, I'm happy to work with any of you. So just reach out, shoot me a message. And if I don't get back to you immediately, it's not because I'm avoiding you. It's just that I do have a busy life, but I love helping people. I love seeing other people be successful, and I love helping them get there. So,
yeah, that's awesome. We do really appreciate you being on the show, Seth. And then also we want to thank DOW Outfitters. Check them out. A-Bear Custom Decoy Rigs and good old Jason, man. Check out his cooking example. Me and Joe will be on that one. But like always, y'all.
The proper popper.
Yeah. But like always, y'all have a good one, and let valor not fail.